I went looking through the house and hoping I can find something.
The difference between assault and aggravated assault is almost always a weapon, a knife or a gun.
You have to err on the side of caution. I mean, time is an enemy here.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me remotely, still from the big NYC, is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor, and fish out of water today, Jim. Southern girl takes New York.
There you go. Well, you know, please leave it the way you found it. I really would appreciate that. Thank you. And with us today in the studio is our very special guest.
Former detective, special victim detective, 20-year career veteran of the DeKalb County Police Department, Detective Kevin McNeil.
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm great, great.
It's great to have you back.
Great to see you, Jim. Great to be in here, friend, again.
Thank you.
My southern accent partner.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Great to have you with us. Really appreciate it.
The weird thing is, I don't think I've heard either of you say y'all ever once.
Oh, here. Not yet. No. Not yet.
What's up with that?
Just it has to happen organically, Jim. You just don't say on command. Yeah. Right, Kevin? It has to be natural.
It has to be natural. Well, y'all won't get it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you just tell me whether or not, Francie, while you're in New York, instead of hearing y'all, you hear... forget about it, or not for nothing, or take it east, or something like that, because somebody is always going to say something like that over there.
I'll be on the lookout, and then I'll call you for a translation. Who knows what those things mean?
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, we're back with Kevin to talk to us about another one of his cases over the course of his career that he felt stood out and he wanted to discuss with us on Best Case, Worst Case.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you, the case you've picked out for today, where in your career were you when this case occurred?
Oh, man, I was still trying to find myself as a detective. I don't even think I was a detective for more than 6 months. I just got out of training. And so I was very intimidated.
Really?
Yeah. You know, being new and thinking I didn't know enough. So I was following everybody's lead, like listening and some of the things, even when I disagreed with him, I couldn't say anything because I felt like I didn't know enough to say anything.
Got it.
Yeah.
So very early on, you're a rookie. How long were you in the academy?
Well, I was in the police academy for, that's a long time ago, 26 weeks. And then they trained me as a detective. Not long enough. It was, I think, like a month or so.
So you went to the police academy then for 26 weeks, then... Were you a street cop for a while?
I was a street cop for 8 years.
Okay, you're a street cop. And now, at this point in your career, you're a brand new detective?
Brand new detective.
Okay, so you're a rookie detective.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
But you spent years on the street.
Yeah, and what made me become a detective is I had an incident on the street where I had to use my weapon, and that didn't turn out so good. So it was one of those moments where I had a career decision to make, like, wow, that was too close for comfort. And so that's how I decided to become a detective.
Okay, so that sounds like another case.
Exactly.
Yeah. Possibly even a best case, worst case medical.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But so now you're a brand new detective. How did you come upon this particular case?
This particular case was a missing person case. And they decided, the supervisor, we're going to use this case to train him. And so they brought me along. And it was a missing person case. And what was weird, it was an elderly person.
Okay.
Didn't have Alzheimer's. Was perfectly healthy. And the reason they thought it was odd, the daughter, they used to go out to eat every Friday. That was like their little thing, his daughter and him. And he wasn't home. And another thing, he always paid his rent in cash, always a day early. He hadn't paid his rent. Mm. So those two things make them realize something's not right. He's not home. He's missing this dinner with the daughter, which is routine for them. It's like a tradition. And he hasn't paid his rent, which is unlike him.
Okay. So how long had it been since she last saw him, man?
She saw him the last time they had that dinner, that
so
last Friday.
Like a week earlier.
A week earlier.
But the landlord didn't get him coming in the day before. Yeah. So he's at least missing that day. Had anybody seen him as far as you know?
Nobody's seen him. He stayed in this little, it was a little apartment building, like a lot of elderly people stayed to themselves. And so when we knocked around, they even said, you know, he normally comes outside and sits on his porch, and we haven't seen him in a week. So now we know we got a legitimate missing person.
Right. So yeah. It could be as much as a week earlier that he went missing.
A week earlier.
Because when you said he pays his rent in cash the day before, to me, the first thing that perked up, is this somebody who got robbed on his way to paying his rent?
And that's one of the things that I started looking into.
Okay.
Because that's one of the questions I would ask. Tell me something that you know about him that you think is that I should know.
Okay.
And then they will say, well, he always flashed his money. I said, what do you mean by that? Well, he was a veteran. He got, you know, he retired and he didn't believe in banks. So he kept cash on him all the time. Mm. So he would always, we used to tell him, don't count cash like that in public. And so I thought that was, I was like, okay, so now I'm thinking like you're
That's
thinking.
That's a risk factor.
Yeah. I'm thinking motive, risk, who would want to do this, who would want to, you know, do something to this person.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get this case. They're taking you through it because they're using this as a training case for you, your first detective case.
Yeah.
And what do you first find out in the course of this investigation?
This one, I first feel gut instincts. Like I knew it as a street officer, but as a detective, I felt differently because the detectives that were there, the veteran detectives, they were not pushing enough. Mm. Like, they was treating it like, okay, maybe he wandered off. But in my mind, I'm like, no, nobody wanders off who's this old and set in their ways, has these many traditions with daughter. Then you got too many important things going on in his life. Pays with cash every single time. You know, people like I knew don't break up their schedules or their routines, particularly as you get older. Mm-hmm. They just suddenly abruptly just disappear. But they was treating it like a person who just probably wandered off and didn't want to be bothered. Mm-hmm. And my instinct told me that wasn't the case. So we did a search warrant on the house. Go in the house, very neat. Nothing looks disturbed because I wanted to make sure there's nobody kick in the door. And
so it doesn't look like there's any kind of abduction or anything else. Mm-hmm. Does it look like he packed his stuff and left?
Nope, nothing like that. He has a cat, which was another sign for me. It was like, okay, who will leave that cat here?
So the cat was stuck in that apartment with no food?
Stuck in the apartment with no food. So that was another telltale sign. But I started noticing again, you know, and I was a new guy, so I couldn't ask questions. So I was like, there's no sense of urgency here, you know. Uh-huh. So, of course, I went looking through the house and hoping I can find something.
What'd you find?
Phone number.
A phone number.
A phone number with a female's name on this dresser next to his bed. And I was like, oh, that is interesting. All right. And so, you know, now my theory is, you know, did grandpa have a little hobby, you know? So
you mean a girlfriend?
Yeah, a girlfriend. So I took the number and I started doing some research on it. It came back to a young female.
A young female?
Young female.
How young was young?
24, 25. He was like, I think he was like 76, 78, something like that. Yeah.
Kevin, before you go on, I cannot help myself. I'm such a cat lover. I just want to make sure that his cat was okay.
Oh, yeah, the cat was okay. We had to actually call his daughter to come get the cat. And yeah, the cat was okay.
Okay, thank you. I had to know.
Francie, that you didn't ask what kind of cat.
Oh,
it was.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to put Kevin on the spot. It was a rookie guy. I mean, it was a long time ago. Maybe he doesn't recall the kind of cat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I wouldn't have known.
All right. So you got this number. It's a 24-year-old girl.
Yes.
And what do you find out about her and her history?
I get phone records and found out, okay, she's been arrested before.
Really?
For prostitution and drug possession.
Really?
So I'm saying, okay.
Sounds like a high-risk person.
Yeah.
Wait, and did the phone records tell you whether or not they'd been communicating often?
Yes. Well, not often. It was About 3 days before we think he went missing, that was a phone call.
And that was the last time?
That was the last time.
And what about the first time? When did it start?
It started probably 2 weeks, if I recall correctly. It wasn't that long. That's another thing that kind of made me weary. Like, this is not a friend. Like, this is somebody he just met.
So it was a new relationship.
It was a new relationship. It was
very suspicious.
And it wasn't long conversations. You know, the phone calls are like 30 seconds or a minute, you know, so they weren't talking to have conversations. So that kind of made me suspicious as well.
So I imagine that if she had a criminal record, you probably had some kind of address for her.
Exactly. Exactly. First, I had a parent. There's another thing. Let me back up. That was a record of her missing. Parents had reported her missing.
Really? The same woman?
Same woman.
When did they report her missing?
They reported her missing. It was about 2 months. It was like weird because it's like nobody was looking for her. And she was an adult. And like, how in a perfectly adult is missing? But now I got the number. So I'm calling the parents to try to get more information. What do you mean she's missing? And what they meant by missing, the reason they reported her missing, they tried to get her help for a drug issue. And she left and had no more contact with them. It wasn't a real missing person where they thought something happened to her. They just wanted to get her some help.
And she wanted to avoid that.
Yes. And that's when I found out additional information. When I talked to the mom, they mentioned this boyfriend that they were uncomfortable her being with. And he's the reason that they believe she's living this type of lifestyle.
So by boyfriend, I'm assuming you mean someone other than this 76-year-old man.
Yeah, he was a troublemaker. And when I looked him up, his criminal history really told a lot.
Well, what did you find out in his criminal history?
Like assaults, aggravated assaults, drug possession. And so I thought this guy's pretty interesting. And now he had an address that was around the corner, like down the street from the actual missing person.
Mm. Well, and one thing, Kevin, I like people to know, especially because I'm familiar with Georgia law, having been a state prosecutor there myself, is that the difference between assault and aggravated assault is almost always a weapon, a knife or a gun. So this may very well be a very dangerous guy you're talking about.
Exactly. And putting those things together, I'm trying to build a kind of profile of what type of person I'm looking for. And again, I'm new and they're treating it like, OK, just give it some time. He may return. But all these things I'm doing or seeing, phone number of a young girl, I'm investigating. This young girl has a history. Mom is saying she's with this bad person she doesn't like. So I'm in my mind, I'm thinking the worst.
Right.
No, I fear for his safety.
Yes. Well,
and I think you're right for putting those things together. I mean, you have to err on the side of caution. I mean, time is an enemy here, not a friend.
Yeah.
So you find out that this guy has a violent record. Mm-hmm. You find out that he basically lives very close to where this missing person is living or disappeared from. Where do you go next? I mean, how do you put this together?
I go to his house. And when I go to the address, I knock on the door and this African-American gentleman comes to the door. But he wasn't the boyfriend that the mother described and the one I was looking for.
But did you sit down and talk to this guy anyway?
I did.
And what was his name?
His name was Steve.
Okay. Steve.
I asked Steve, does he live alone? I was investigating the case. Did he mind if I can't come in the house and talk to him? And when I walk in the house, he said, sure. At first, he started asking me why. I told him I just need to talk to him about something I was investigating. He allowed me to come in the house. And when I walked in the house, I noticed female clothing. And we went to the kitchen. And as we sat at the table, I noticed mail with Sally's name on it.
Really?
Yeah.
And addressed at that location?
Addressed at that location.
Okay, great. And that's obviously a clue.
Yes.
All right. So did you ask him about whether he knew Sally?
I did. First, I asked him, do you have anybody to stay with him? He said he stayed alone. And I said, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. And I noticed his legs was going. He showed me that he was nervous and tensed up. And I pushed the mail with Sally's name on over to Steve. And I said, Steve, are you sure you stay alone? And that's when he looked at me with this weird look on his face.
And what did he say?
He said, oh, I didn't know her. I don't know her like that. And she doesn't live here. I said, what do you mean Sally doesn't live here? She has mail with your address on it. So now Steve is looking at me like, hey, what's going on? Now he's trying to question me.
Right.
You know, right. He's trying to kind of throw it my way. And so I asked him, I said, look, man, if you ain't in any trouble, but if you're trying to conceal something, right, I'm already, you already showed me you lied to me.
Right.
I said, so Steve, don't get yourself in something that you're really not involved in trying to cover up for somebody.
Right. So did you ask Steve about this guy, Robert, that the mother of Sally was really concerned about?
I did. And
what
why?
Did you say?
Yeah. And because I told him that's how I came to his address. Because Robert has somehow used his address when he was locked up in jail to get out. He gave the jail this address. That's what led me to his house.
Got it.
That's what led me to Steve's house.
So,
yeah.
Did Robert actually live there?
He said Robert lived there with Sally.
So wait, so he goes from saying nobody lives with me to then he has to acknowledge that Sally gets mail there. And now suddenly he admits that Robert and Sally live there. You can't believe a thing this guy says.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, so that's interesting that he actually admits that they both live there.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do now that this guy's lied to you so many times?
I know he's lying. So I called my supervisor because I'm doing this on my own. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, they're treating it like, okay, this person's going to come back at any time, give us some time. But if I've gone and done these extra work and I'm over there by myself, I haven't told anybody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so now I'm thinking I'm on to something. It scares me. I'm not like, oh, snap. Now what do I do? You know, so I said, maybe I need to call and get help.
Right.
You know. So I called the supervisor. Supervisor shows up and, you know, you're new detective. You don't know you can curse. You can use methods to kind of intimidate people. So my supervisor gets there and just goes into this guy, man. I mean, he's calling him all kind of lies, SOBs. And I was like, you can do that? You know, so I was like, wow. And then I noticed this guy's kind of giving it up. And
what was he saying?
Yeah, I was like, what? He was like, where they at? We know you lying. You already lied to my detective. So where are these people at? He said, I don't know. They just up in disappear. I haven't seen them in a while. So when the last time you saw them? He said they was in the backyard arguing. Arguing about what? They were fighting about something. And I said, okay, what were they fighting about? I don't know, man. And so we pressed him a little bit more. Pressed him a little bit more. He said they left here and went to Savannah. I said, oh, Savannah. Mm-hmm. So do they have a car? He said they rented one.
Okay, Savannah's pretty far away.
Yeah.
Savannah's four hours from Atlanta, yeah.
Okay, so they left, and did he say anything about this missing person, Mr. Smith?
He didn't. He said he didn't know, because we brought that up. We told him why we was there. We investigated the missing elderly male, like, Mr. Had he ever seen him, Mr. Smith, with Sally? And he said, no, he didn't. He said, but Sally does stuff. That's how he put it.
Does stuff.
Yeah. I said, what do you mean by that? And he was like, well, she's a friend, but you know what I mean. And I said, no, you got to tell me what she means. You know, he said, well, she's on meth and she sells her body to get money. So if she was with him, it probably wasn't good. So, okay. I said, I'm going to investigate. I probably figured that out. Right. So, and so I tell him, what did they go to Savannah for? He said, that I don't know. So now I'm like, okay, who rented the car? You know, you got Sally who doesn't work. You got Robert who doesn't work, her boyfriend, who rented the car. That's when I found out Steve, the guy who's here, I'm talking to, rented the car for them.
Okay. So he probably knows what kind of car it was.
Exactly.
Okay.
Rent a car company. So they gave me another lead. So I go to the rental car place, ask, can I get the car? Because I'm thinking like, okay, we need to do some forensics on this car. Right. You know, and the first thing I find out, they've rented it back out.
Oh, so it got returned and they rented it out again.
Rented it back out, washed it and everything.
So that means that they drove somewhere and came back? Did you find out how far they drove or anything?
Exactly. They actually, we got the odometer and it proved, I couldn't tell where they drove, but the start and the ending, you can tell they drove. It matched up with what Steve was saying. They possibly went to Savannah.
Okay.
So, and they had the car for like 2 days. It wasn't a long rental.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. And I'm worried because some of our listeners may not know, Savannah is on the coast of Georgia. So now I'm worried about why they felt the need to go to the coast.
Exactly. And for 2 days, and why were they going all of a sudden?
Okay. So did that car yield any kind of forensic evidence?
It didn't.
Okay.
We had to actually wrestle with the rental car company to get the person who had it to bring it back immediately. Mm. And they really didn't want to do that. So we had to kind of push them to do a call corporate. So it was a big mess.
Okay. But you got the car. There was no forensics.
No forensic.
But at least you know that they were traveling for a couple of days.
Exactly.
So where did you go from there?
From there, I called her, found a number for her because Steve finally gave me a number that she could be reached at. So
different than the number that you had had for her in the first place.
Different from the one she had in first. So it's showing me she's moving around and she's trying to be, you know, discreet. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get in contact with Sally's, you know, when Steve gives me Sally's new number, I call her and she says, who is this? And I tell her and she hangs up the phone.
Right. That's not suspicious at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I call her back hoping that she'll get the phone, you know, to Robert, hopefully. But that doesn't happen. The phone goes straight to voicemail. So, of course, try to use resources to track the phone, see where they were at when we called them. They were back in Atlanta. It just didn't give us exactly where they were. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have enough at that point to try to get a warrant. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't force them to come in and I couldn't take out arrest warrants. But in the meanwhile, like now, by this time, 3 weeks have passed and the family is calling me like, you know, what's going on? What's going on? We still haven't. So now what I do is I check bank records. So let me dispel what my supervisors are saying, that this guy just left, took a vacation, decided he's just going to live a different life. So he was getting a retirement check, Social Security check. And when I called the Social Security office, I said, well, we deposited this check 2 weeks ago. Nothing has been withdrawn. Because you got to remember, he used to withdraw cash just to pay his bills. So this bank account was building up and he wasn't withdrawing money. Now I'm thinking the worst. Like now I have to come to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it just went dead from there. The case went cold and the daughter would call me weekly, you know, and she would come up with her own theories as to what happened. Apparently, he had a brother that stayed in South Carolina that wanted his inheritance. Apparently, he was in the will. So she was thinking that he did something to him. But I was able to kind of chase that lead down. The guy never left South Carolina, the guy she was referring to. So I was able to say, no, I don't see that. Mm-hmm. So that was real heartbreaking.
So literally the case at that point just went completely cold.
Went completely cold.
And you could never actually find Sally or Robert?
Nope.
Really?
And it was like they told me to move on to other cases. And that bothered me right until I resigned because the daughter was still calling me. Like even after being in the unit for 12 years as a special victim, I would still get calls. And she would tell me, hey, we need a death certificate because the monies that he had, they won't release because we don't have any confirmation of death. And the daughter would call me crying. Like she would like, that is so hard. My daddy didn't just disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to bury him. And, you know, you hear that as a detective and you're like, man, you start thinking, did I do enough? Mm-hmm. You know, and being new at the time, not that I, when I was you know, getting older in the field and got more experience, I look back on it and say, we didn't do everything we should have done. We should have done more. And here's another thing. Let me go back. Steve, the guy who rented the car, we went to the house, found out lying. A week later, I went back because I wanted to get, I said, he knows more than what I think he knows. I don't think he told us everything. The apartment was empty.
He moved.
He moved back to New York. We lost track of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this is, unfortunately, this is one of the difficulties of being a local police officer. If you were an FBI agent, you'd send a lead to New York and track that guy down. Yeah. And we would probably send a lead to Savannah and find out what the hell happened there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I was thinking. They were two, my supervisors. And I was new. And now it taught me a lot to never, again, never give up on a case and do more. It's better to do more than do less. Again, could have contacted the FBI and said, hey, we got this missing person we probably need your help with. Yeah. They didn't think that was a good idea. But like I said, now looking back on it, I wish I had done more.
So given that, can you tell us whether this is a best case or a worst case?
Oh, it's my worst case. It's my worst case.
And tell me how that makes you feel. Like, why is it something that still, you're, all these years later, you're still bothered by it?
Because I felt like we didn't do enough to bring justice to this victim or the victim's family. And we left a daughter who's still out there, who knows, I don't know where my father is. We used to have dinner every Friday. It's like tradition. And that thing has been taken away from her. And as young as she was in her 20s, to call me almost every week to see if I found out something. I wonder, even now, what quality of life does she have, worrying about that? And you know, that's something that I often tell detectives, that this is more than just a job. You know, when you're doing this work, you become part of people's lives. And to think like that, you have to do a job to know you did everything you possibly could. And that's why it's my worst case, because I don't think I did everything. I can blame it on my newness or whatever, but I don't think I did everything that was, could have possibly been done in that particular case.
So can I just ask for clarification? Did you talk to the Social Security office? Was it Social Security?
Yes, Social Security office.
Yeah, you talked to the Social Security office about his checks.
Yes.
Now, he never paid his rent that month.
Yes.
And but they said a check had been sent and it never had been cashed.
Yeah.
I mean, the theory that I was going by was that maybe he cashed the money and basically never made it to pay his rent.
Yeah.
But he didn't cash that particular check.
No, because it was direct deposit.
Okay.
So it went into an account automatically.
Right. But he didn't like banks. So he would take money out of the bank to pay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So did he take all the money out from all of his previous checks and have that with him?
See, that's he just took some money out. He didn't take all the money out. Okay. He just took some of the money out. And I, my theory was that somehow he met this girl in the neighborhood. She saw he was old, saw he had cash on him, and she befriended him and told her boyfriend, Robert. And Robert and she came up with a plan. We're going to rob this old guy, right? You're going to set him up, act like you want to spend some time with him, and we're going to rob him. And I think it went bad. Mm-hmm. I think this person probably fought, didn't go down like they thought it would. And I think they killed him. They did something to him and got rid of his body. So
well, and you said he was a veteran, right? So he probably did fight for his life. And I think that, like I said earlier, it's very telling that Steve said they were probably going to Savannah, where they likely dumped his body in the Atlantic.
Yes. And that's what made me go back to Steve's house that the week following, because I was like, he knows too much. Like, how do you know they went to Savannah? They had to tell you why.
Right.
And why are you in the car for people that you say you barely know?
Right.
And putting your name on the vehicle. So, you know, but at the time, you know, that didn't, it took me a week to kind of question that. Like, because right then I'm trying to like figure things out as a detective. And none of that made sense to me. Like, why would you do that? So when he moved back to New York, I was like, wow. And I only found that out when I knocked on the neighbor's door. Like, hey, what happened to, oh, he went back to New York. Wow.
Well, so Kevin, this is an interesting question that I would like to know. This is an unsolved case, right? It's an open missing persons case.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't mean it's unsolved forever. I mean, some evidence or some witness, someone could come forward and the case could be opened again, right?
It will. And I'm glad you brought that up, Fran. I'm so glad you brought that up. But here's my concern. I think that we did such a sloppy job in the beginning that if we picked it back up, or any investigator picked it back up, how strong of a case will we have? That's my concern. I don't think we did enough to consolidate or to record the work that we did and how we tied all these things together. Because I think we could have did more with Steve. We could have pushed him a little more, brought him into the precinct, gave him, let him, because we didn't even have him give us a written statement.
Oh, really?
All right? We were just sitting there casually talking to him.
Right, but that doesn't mean he can't be re-interviewed someday if something else comes to light, if there's new evidence. I mean, you certainly recorded who he is, his identifying yes. information, right? And you had the other identifying information for Robert and Sally, too, right?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, it can always be picked back up and go back and see if we can do more with the case.
Yeah, because, I mean, certainly at this point, this victim is presumed dead. Did they get an adjudication of that?
They did not.
They didn't. The family never got that.
Never got it.
Wow.
So.
Well, I mean, fact is he's presumed dead, and homicide cases do not have a statute of limitations. So there's always hope.
Yeah, that's it. That's true.
Always hope.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I assume just from your demeanor that this case really still bothers you.
Oh, yeah. Still bothers me. It's kind of, I think about it often. And so it's kind of, you know, you try to forget about it. And so.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, did he just say forget about it?
Yes, but he said it in a charming Southern accent.
I said it in my Southern accent, not in New York. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. It was so out of context.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, you try to forget about it and it still haunts you.
Huh? Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. I'm sorry for dragging you through a case that is difficult to remember, but hopefully this is a cautionary tale for people out there who are investigating things that sometimes you have to put in that extra effort in the beginning.
Yes.
Even if you think there might not be an absolute reason for it, it's better to find out than to find out later that you didn't do what needed to be done.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Kevin, for coming back and talking to us about one of your worst cases. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the insights you're giving us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciate you coming back and talking to us about your worst cases. Jim said, I feel like our listeners learn just as much from our guests' worst cases as from their best.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. And for now, we're signing off on Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba. And hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stories about child sexual abuse can make us feel powerless. But the good news is that there are organizations working to prevent abuse and keep kids safe. Darkness to Light and their Stewards of Children prevention training has trained more than 1.4 million adults to protect, recognize, and react responsibly to child sexual abuse.
But there's more work to do, and with their 4 million by 2020 goal, Darkness to Light is setting their sights on training 4 million adults around the country to keep kids safe. By donating to Darkness to Light, you can help reach this goal that will make communities across the country safer places for kids.
It starts with you. Visit www.d2l.org today to give. That's www.d2l.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.